Second. Roll call.
Finucane.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Lozinski.
Here.
Stoll.
Here.
And Dr. Winter is unable to attend. She is not feeling well tonight.
If you'll stand and join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everyone. See you. Welcome aboard. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Lozinski.
Yes.
Stoll.
Yes.
Finucane.
Yes.
Kraft.
Yes.
Motion carries.
At this time, we have a hearing of the public. If someone would like to address the board, raise your hand. Let me know that you're coming up to the podium. Seeing none, we'll move on to board committee reports. Mrs. Lozinski, liaison.
I have nothing.
All right. Student achievement, Dr. Stoll.
The only thing that I had, there were too many students to name, but over 100, about 117 students to get the National Merit Scholarship, or National Merit Award at the high school.
Which one?
Wait.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
AP.
Yeah, it was like National Merit's a lot. That would have said a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the AP, that's what it was. Sorry about that.
Policy, anyone want to touch on policy?
I mean, we could, okay, so we do have some policies that we're going to discuss tonight for a first read. We didn't intend on bringing these policies right away. However, when we met with our NEOLA consultant, I indicated that to technically be in compliance, we should have them passed by November 1st. Most of these have to do well, actually, some are finance and some are in my world. We'll go through them specifically, but the parts that deal with the building levels were shared at Administrative Council. So all of the buildings do have drafts of those, and so they're going to be aware of that. But we do have some policies that we'd like to do a first read tonight.
Curriculum?
No, we have not met yet.
Outreach, I'll just say it was a pleasure to represent the board along with Mrs. Lozinski during homecoming week. Something that was touched on last week was the Westlake City Schools Foundation had an opportunity to check Mr. Sumter today. And he is working hard along with Treasurer Hopkins to really work on that document that we currently have in place. There's an interest amongst alums. They talk about it when they were with us last week. Hey, the foundation would like to make contributions, as many other schools in the area do. And just chatting with Mr. Sumter, as well as Treasurer Hopkins, it sounds like we're making a lot of progress as far as getting that structure in place. I had the opportunity to attend the 2018 Hall of Fame induction ceremony and the dinner. It's good to hear from our athletic director, Mr. Cipollone, and also the president of Westlake Demons Athletic Boosters, Mrs. Redinger. And it's good to hear about all the things that they do for athletics here in the district. It was exciting to hear from some of our inductees, some of those graduates of Westlake City Schools. The Distinguished Hall of Fame inductee was the chief of staff to Vice President Joe Biden, Mr. Steve Ricchetti. He graduated class of 1975. Sharon Chase Green, class of 1985. The Athletic Hall of Fame inductee was PGA pro golfer Heather Breeden-Hawk, class of 1990. Is that name ring a bell with you? A young lady that golfed on the boys team, because there was not a girls team, went down state, and that led to her going to a number of schools with scholarships, but eventually she became a pro, and she's still a pro today. Also an honorary Hall of Fame inductees included Norm Irwin, Joe Schofield, and Mary Lou Glass-Paco. What else on reach? That's all I have. Finance. Mr. Finucane, did you want to touch on anything?
I think we'll be meeting next Friday to discuss a little bit more of some of the reports that Mr. Hopkins is presenting tonight.
Mr. Hopkins, would you like to add to that?
I would, and I'd like to take a few, more than a few minutes here to go over some information regarding the five-year forecast. I do not have it on the screen. I know the board, because it's still in draft format, it's not up for consideration tonight. I'm not asking the board to vote on the five-year forecast tonight. But I just want to go over what my thought process is with you. And at our next October meeting, 2 weeks from tonight, I would ask for the board's approval on the forecast. So you have, if you're logged into Board Docs, you should be able to bring up the forecasts in front of you. There's a number of them, and I'll explain what they are to you as we work through them. And I apologize to people in the audience because, again, I don't have this up here, and that's purposely as it's still a working document as we're trying to get the finalized information before the end of October here. So whatever's easier for the board members to look at, there's a couple documents on there, and you can bring up either the one that says the forecast state template or the forecast, I think I have it as FY19 listed on there, if you would open one of those. Whatever, they're the same. Same numbers, it's just what your comfort is in viewing it. I try to put it in how it looks on the state website. Now, as we look at the forecast, I just want to give some general reminders that reading the forecast in general can't be fully understood without reviewing the assumptions. So I have a document on there as well that details my assumptions with graphs on our historical information as well as what my forecasting is, and gives far more details than certainly the Excel document of the forecast will, or even what I'll talk about tonight. So I would ask that people would look through that to get a better understanding of where we are in our finances. But really, my main purpose of tonight is to explain the forecast to the board here, get your comfort level, answer any questions you may have, if you have any over the next week or so. If you review it and you have concerns about the forecast, please let me know. Again, this is not right now asking the board to approve it, but you're more than welcome to offer your input as we seek that board approval later this month. So reviewing some of these things, I just want to walk through and explain what my thought process is and why the numbers are the way they are. For this year, I have total revenues of $49,580,000, and that's down almost $3 million from last year. And the rationale on why it's down is, as we talked about earlier this year, or earlier this calendar year, last year, fiscal year 18, we took in about $1 million more than expected in local property taxes. And the general consensus between treasurers and the county was that this was the prepayment of property taxes due to the federal IRS tax changes that limit your local and state tax deductions from your federal to $10,000. So I will tell you, with our community and with some higher valued homes, I can certainly foresee some people choosing to do that, to try to get the write-off in calendar year 18, because they would no longer be able to have that. So one of the big reasons that we're down money this year, and we're down about $2 million from last year in the local property taxes, is because that $1 million that should have been received this year was actually received last fiscal year. So it's not just the million that we're not going to receive, it's actually a double effect because we received it last year. So when we look year after year, it's down $2 million. Okay, now you'll see in the forecast, I jump up that following $1 million in the next year and keep it going on, because I think it's just a one-time effect because of the tax law changes. But that does have an impact on the forecast there, at least for next, for this fiscal year 19. Additionally, my revenue down in unrestricted state grants, line 1.035, this is our foundation payment. And the big difference here is we were receiving the tangible personal property supplement. That has been completely, totally, utterly phased out. And it was supposed to be completely phased out in FY18, but we did receive a final true-up payment of about $300,000. So we're not going to receive that anymore. So I do have that down. One of the things you'll see is on the state foundation formula there, where I'm holding it at 3.1 million, or the state funds there, 3.18 million, I'm holding that throughout the forecast. You know, anybody's guess here is as good as mine on what the state's going to do with their biennium budget. You know, I say this, and I knock on wood saying this, is I'm not sure how much less they can give us. I think if they could, they would. You know, we're viewed already. We only receive a 5% state share. And actually, we would receive less money. But right now, we're on what's called the guarantee. And they went back to, I think it was fiscal year 15, and they said, hey, you received X number of dollars. We'd like to give you less, but we won't give you any less than this because we'll guarantee you where you were. Okay. Now, if they remove that guarantee, we could certainly see a reduction, further reduction of our state funds. Okay. If they don't remove that guarantee, or if they add to our funds, we would see that increase. So with that uncertainty, and now being FY19, the end of the two-year biennium budget, I'm really holding it as a constant because of that uncertainty and just kind of flatlining it throughout the forecast. Moving down to line 1.045, restricted federal grants and aid. No, I take that back. I apologize. It's 1.050, property tax allocation. Property tax allocation is a, only, all this is a reimbursement of homestead rollback and exemption. Okay? This number can fluctuate year to year based on people who qualify within the community. And the homestead exemption for any existing levies, or homestead rollback is for any owner-occupied home in the community for existing levies. You actually get a 12.5% reduction on the taxes that you pay, and it's reimbursed by the state. For homestead rollback, or for people who are over 65 and qualify for an income-based exemption, and they receive a $25,000 credit off of the valuation of their home. So the state kicks in this money. I'm estimating it at 4.4 million. Now let's say I'm off here. Let's say that either I'm low or high, it doesn't really matter. And the reason I say it that way is if we don't receive it here, we will receive it in property tax allocation. Either we receive it from the taxpayer themselves, or we receive it through the state reimbursement. One way or the other, it's just a, you know, in this case, it's you know, just a shell game on how we receive the money, whether it's a state reimbursement or not. The last line there that I want to point out is just the all other revenues. This really is a catch-all. This is kindergarten tuition. This is pay to participate fees. This is we have money coming in from the agreement with American Greetings and Crocker Park. This could be if we have other pilot agreements, payment in lieu of taxes. This is kind of a catch-all of it doesn't fit in one of those other lines, so we just throw it in the other object. You know, we have some uncertainty in here. We kind of have a baseline of what we know that we're going to receive. The Crocker Park agreement with the TIF agreement with American Greetings is actually up. Remember, we're at a base of $455,000 with the opening of Block K and actually an increase already in the valuation of the property at American Greetings. I think we're expected to take in around $565,000 this year, so a little bit higher than what was anticipated as the minimum.
What's the floor on American Greetings?
$455,000.
Now, there was a pilot on the second phase, or no?
Block K had was part of the TIF agreement. Block K is the Hilton Hotel, yeah. Or Hyatt, Hilton or Hyatt Hotel. Hyatt Hotel, there's some retail space around that area as well. You know, that's referred to as Block K on their plans, and that was also eligible under the American Greetings piece of it.
Under the TIF, right?
Under the TIF. Now, those two together, okay, add into that around 565, I believe, we're at this year. The American Greetings alone is a minimum of 455. Block K doesn't necessarily have a minimum, but has a formula they put together based on the hotel rooms, number of operating hotel rooms, based on square footage of retail space. That can change on an annual basis based on occupancy. Let's say they do renovations and they don't have occupancy. That wouldn't count that particular year.
And those are the main drivers for that other revenue, right?
In this line item, you know, that makes up about a third of it right now. I will say another third is about your pay to participate and your kindergarten tuition. I mean, each of those are generating over $200,000 a year. So, you know, that's going to make up almost another third of that $1.5 million that I'm looking at.
John, when you attend the tax meetings, does that get into either a block A or the correct part?
No, those are all separate negotiated agreements between the school, the city, and, you know, the owners of the property.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. We only get involved in there's abatement.
Correct.
Issues associated with it. And current ones and if there's any pending ones. So I think Highland might be looking for one, or actually I think they did get one, but it won't go into effect for another year.
Yeah, and generally speaking, the city is allowed to sign off on agreements up to 50% of the abatement. Anything over 50%, generally speaking, there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, would have to come before the Board of Education to be approved. But the first 50%, it's under the city's authority to grant that based on their rules.
They give that away a lot.
I can't speak to how often it's given away. I know it is used to entice businesses.
To retain and or expand.
Correct.
Well, at one time, the city of Westlake was giving some kind of tax abatement to the, I don't know if you'd call it an abatement, but to all the athletes that moved into, or was that under the RETA tax? Some, they saved taxes by moving to Westlake. They didn't have.
Well, the income tax is much lower than anyone else.
Lower than some other cities.
I mean, you're seeing a lot of your.
They were actually giving them a special fee because we sure had a lot of athletes.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, there would be no special treatment that would affect the school district, as we're driven mostly by property tax.
Okay.
You know, you generally wouldn't be able to offer a residential tax abatement, okay? On a per person basis. There are communities that do CRAs, they're called Community Reinvestment Acts, that will do abatements, and they're usually though based on improvements that you make to your home. So, you know, there's certain, or in City of Cleveland, for instance, if you build a new home in Cleveland, at least last time I checked, it was a 15-year, I think 75 or 100% tax abatement, which means that for the first 15 years, you would pay, you know, a quarter or less of your taxes. But that was to incentivize people to build a new home in the city of Cleveland.
Are we going to see an increase where we benefit by the new tax evaluations?
Okay. So, you know, and that's a wonderful question to ask. So we are seeing an increase in the valuations. We're going to see it again most likely next year, as that's actually the sextennial update, you know, next year. So, you know, we're going to see that increase. Now, we have in place in Ohio, it's called House Bill 920. And what House Bill 920 says is that if you pass a levy and you're going to collect, we're just going to use round numbers, so you're going to collect $1 million, okay? During the term of that levy, it can't collect more than $1 million, okay? So if your property values increase, okay, if your property values double, and you're like, okay, now you should get $2 million, no, the millage is a reduction factor, so your millage would drop in half. Now the exception to that is new construction. New construction is not subject to House Bill 920. So new construction would add to your property tax the money that we're actually receiving, because they're required to pay that. That's kept outside of that reduction factor. Normal increases, your normal triennial update, your sextennial update, you know, increases because your neighbor sold at, you know, $50,000 more than what your house is valued at, and the county increases yours. Those are all subject to the reduction factor. Now, let me just be abundantly clear, okay? Just because your property tax goes up, or just because your valuation goes up, does not guarantee that your property tax will stay the same, okay? It's based on, you have to look at the whole pie of the community, okay? So if your property values went up and everyone else went down, okay, you may end up paying more in your tax because of your revaluation of your home, okay? So there are some funky things that will, it's not on a house-by-house basis, it's on a community-as-a-whole basis. So when they adjust that millage, you know, you could be like, wait a minute, you know, Todd, you're saying that my taxes won't increase. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, you know, it can, there are different pieces, but in general, House Bill 920, and from the school district's point of view, we're not allowed to collect more money than what it was originally passed for. So that's why when we talk about our tax values, we talk about our effective tax rate, our effective millage.
That's a great question. Last week, and as valuations were increased countywide, and you saw those newspaper articles, mm-hmm. a lot of citizens asking, gosh, you guys must be doing great, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we're not. Now,
that's not the case.
Now, I will put one other caveat. I'm going to have a lot of caveats tonight on the forecast sure. and stuff. Is we do get a small increase because we have what's called inside millage, okay? Inside millage, we have 5.8 mils. Inside millage is not subject to the reduction factor. So no matter what, whatever your house is valued at, you pay inside millage of 5.8 mils, okay? So if our property valuation doubles, you know, in value, okay, we would see a slight increase because of the inside millage. And that's really where you look at the property tax line where I'm showing a very, very small growth each year. That's because of the inside millage. We'll have, you know, whether it's home additions, you know, people doing renovations on their homes, or if property values increase because of arm length sales, you know, that will drive a small growth because of inside millage. But overall, right now, we have an effective millage rate of, and I was going to print it out and bring it, our operating millage is somewhere sitting around 32 mils. And that includes inside millage. So out of 32 mils, only 6 of it is where we would see an increase, or 5.8 is where we'd see the increase. The rest of it is all subject to the reduction factor. So no, unfortunately, you know, there's no inflationary increases for us. It's, we have to go out and pass new levies.
And TPP, I know TPP is with the phase out, and do you think this will be the last year we'll be talking about TPP in any way, shape, or form as far as receiving?
It's over. We're not going to receive any. I mean, last in fiscal year 18 was the supplement. We can argue about it, and we can try to continue to keep it in the memory of the legislator because that has removed a lot of money from us. If I go back, I think it was $4 to $5 million a year at the height of TPP for Westlake, and the supplement as it got phased out. Just in fiscal year 17, I believe it was 1.4 million. So we're talking about a significant chunk of change that was removed. You know, nearly 10% of your budget was removed with TPP and was not really, you know, given back to us in the CAT tax. You know, so it's a challenge, but I don't know. We're not going to see money coming from TPP anymore.
Anything else on finance that you want to touch on?
So working through the forecast still, yeah. Okay, we've got the expenditures, okay? Right. So the expenditures, we have, you know, personal services and insurance benefits. Again, I just want to remind everyone, I mean, we're a school district. We're a people business. This is what we, you know, spend things on. And, you know, when other businesses or other business leaders say, well, geez, how can you spend, you know, 80, 90% of your budget on you know, service, we're not buying widgets. We're not buying raw materials. We're not, you know, shipping things out. We don't have these other costs. You know, we are here to educate students, and that requires hiring staff to do so. So, you know, we are going to be high in personal services on a percentage basis, or I'm sorry, of salary and benefits, but that's a good thing. That's okay. School districts who are showing that they're in a lower number, okay, I promise you are just outsourcing ways. They're just figuring out ways to hire a third party to do it, and then you just move it to something else because you have to spend your money on people. There's, you know, I'm not sure what else we would exist for if we didn't hire staff to educate.
They would put that in purchase services.
That would be moved to purchase services, correct. So, you know, you may see a district and look at it and go, well, geez, why are they at 70% salary and benefits, you know, and you're at 82%? Well, let's compare the other things as well. Let's really get apples to apples, because they're just shifting money around and hiring it through the ESC or hiring staff through a third-party contract, or they're outplacing more students. You know, a great example would be is we have students with special needs. if we can educate them in-house, we want to do that. But sometimes we can't, and you know, we have to hire a third party to do that by placing them at a facility that's best for them. Well, if they're at the facility, it's purchase service. If they're here in-house, it's salary and benefits. Either way, we're paying it. It's just shifted between those two areas.